Hello, Iowa! Look, I know you'll get dozens of people trying to make some attenuated connection to Iowa, so I'm not going to tell you that my great-great-grandparents settled in Henry County in 1850, or that my mother was born in Ottumwa, because that's not why we gather. We gather for the sake of our nation standing in the world, and for the sake of the country we're going to pass on to that next generation, we gather to make sure that Donald Trump's a one-term president. But it's more than that. It's soundly rejecting the behavior that he's normalizing. Never in my life did I think that I would utter, you'd have a president who gives aid and comfort to our enemies abroad and incites those who fight against the decency at home. The lies, the misstatements, the dividedness by race, gender, geography. We expect more out of our preschoolers now than we do the President of the United States. And it's more than just that. It's rejecting the crony capitalism that he's creating. Whoever tears down this stage tonight will pay more in taxes than Amazon, Chevron, and 60 Fortune 500 companies. Folks expect more. It's about making Washington, D.C. work for them and getting rid of the corrupting influence of money in our elections. Look, when Lindsey Graham says we have to get this tax cut through to make our donors happy, 44% of Americans would have $400 in their pocket in case of emergency, we know something's wrong. When a generation of workers have been replaced by independent contractors, at the same time union membership is half of what it was in the 80s, we know something's wrong. When at the end of the day oil companies are making record profits and Republicans can't even acknowledge that climate change is real, we've got to change the money in our system. That's been the fight of my career, and it's the challenge of our time. This is all about making sure, no matter where you're from, who your parents were, what the color of your skin is, that everyone has a fair shot at a better future. And I say that as somebody raised in a single-parent household, paycheck to paycheck, only knew there was a governor's house in town because I delivered newspapers to it, so I've made it four blocks in life. But everybody has to have a fair shot at that American dream, and that's not true right now. So we need to beat Donald Trump, but we have to make sure our economy in Washington, D.C. works for all of you. Look. But first, we gotta win. If we can't win back places we lost, if we can't change our strategy, if we can't give people a reason to vote for us and not just against him, Donald Trump will win again. Look, I come from a place not unlike Iowa. Know a whole lot of Trump voters. 2016, I was the only Democrat in the country to get reelected statewide in a state where Trump won. He took Montana by 20, I won by 4. 25 to 30% of my voters voted for Donald Trump. The only one in the field that won a Trump state. And you know what? The path to victory, it doesn't just go through the coasts. It goes through Iowa. It goes through Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, all places that we need to win back. And it's not just about the White House. Almost a third of your counties went Obama, Trump. We need to take back those counties as well, because it's not just about the White House, it's about the State House and what your legislature and your Republican governor is doing to you each and every day. I've only been in this race for about 10 weeks, yet it's my eighth trip to Iowa. And I've listened and I've learned from you. About that teacher that said to me, you know what, I had to take a second job just to afford my insulin. Or the farmer in Rippey that says every time Trump tweets, we lose hundreds of thousands of dollars. Or that retiree in Ottumwa after the first debate said, I heard a lot of voices, but I didn't hear my voice. I don't need a revolution. I just need someone to address the problems of here and now, the challenges that we have. So I've taken those voices as I've traveled all across the country. Look, I'm a pro-choice, pro-union, populist Democrat that won three elections in a red state, not by compromising our values, but by getting stuff done. And that's how we win back the places that we lost. Showing up, listening, focusing on those challenges of everyday Americans. I do believe that government can work and government can work with you. My legislature, it's a little bit more Republican than yours even, about 60% Republican. But even in that time of divide, we've been able to get meaningful stuff done. Expanding health care for 100,000 Montanans, increasing mental health availability for all Montanans, kicking dark money out of our elections. Record investments in our education system, yet also recognizing fourth lowest tuition and fees by actually investing in higher ed, freezing college tuition, but also recognizing that not everybody's gonna go to college. Almost 7 out of 10 Americans don't have a college degree. What are we doing for them? Fighting each day to make our two-year colleges not even about a degree, but about a professionally recognized certificate, that apprenticeship where you can climb that ladder in the middle class. As a result, more folks are climbing the ladder in the middle class than any other country or any other state in our nation. So I get stuff done by certainly trying to build relationships with those Republicans, but that doesn't mean compromising our values. I got more vetoes than any governor in the state of Montana. I vetoed every attack on a woman's right to make her own healthcare decisions. 25 states have actually made it harder to access the voting booth. I vetoed every attack on our ballot box and workers' rights to get actually to a courthouse as well. I've kept our public lands in public hands. I've preserved our environment along the way as well. And every single attack on workers to roll back the effort to organize and collectively bargain, I've stopped. That's both how you can govern and how you can win. And we can win this. We can win this, but we can't make it all about Donald Trump. We can't make it just about plans that are written for press releases. They're offering everybody everything free when what really people want is a fair shot in this economy. We can, if we don't spend the next year and a half, we can win this by as long as we're not chasing every one of Trump's tweets. We can make healthcare accessible and affordable for all, but we don't have to disrupt 165 million people on private insurance. We can have a public option, finally negotiate drug prices, take those steps, ending surprise medical bills. 70 times Republicans have tried to repeal and replace Obamacare. We don't need the Democrats to do that to actually make a difference. We can make college affordable and the debt more accessible, freezing those interest rates, taking those steps, cracking down on the fly-by-nights like the Trump universities, making sure increasing availability for Pell Grants. But we don't have to forget about 68% of Americans that don't have even that college degree, providing them that path to the better life as well. We can address climate change. Fire seasons are 78 days longer in Montana than they were 40 years ago. And remember George H.W. Bush? That first one, he actually said, we'll address the greenhouse effect with the White House effect. Republicans won't even acknowledge that climate change is real anymore. We can, as we take care of dark money, but we can also rejoin Paris, invest in renewables, do what the original conservationists, our farmers are doing, is investing in the opportunities to get to the point where we are carbon neutral. And as we do that, we don't have to leave communities behind. We can finally break that dark money stranglehold of the NRA and address gun safety for all Americans, because nobody should be afraid to go to their school for an outing like this. We can do all that and more. Look, this is the most important election, certainly in my lifetime. It's about beating Donald Trump, but it's also about preserving this 243-year experiment called representative democracy. It's about not accepting what's been normalized. It's about the kid who's growing up right now who says, I can do better than my parents, at a time where only about half of Americans are doing better than their parents were at their age. It's about recognizing 60% of Americans haven't had a pay increase in 40 years in real terms, and they deserve every opportunity that a Koch brother or a millionaire has. It's about winning back places we lost, giving people a reason to know that we will fight for their everyday lives, making it better, because if somebody's voting their economic interests, their health care interests, their education interests, they'd sure as hell be voting for Democrats. But first, we got to win. It's a false distinction. Do we take out places like make sure that we run up the numbers in California, or do we make sure that we win Iowa? I will guarantee you, if you make me the nominee, I will win California, Massachusetts, Vermont. I don't know if those senators could make the same guarantee that they could win Montana, Iowa, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, places that we have to win in order to get there and beat Donald Trump. You know, I've learned my time in Iowa, not just because of my great-great-grandparents who settled in Henry County, or my grandparents who went to college here, or my mom who's born in Ottumwa. I have learned about Iowa nice. We are 178 days from you all taking a big field, kind of throwing in Harry Potter's sorting hat and narrowing it down. And I know that you all take this responsibility very, very seriously. And Iowa nice is, Georgia Governor, you're somewhere on my list. Like, well, is that on your list of 37? Or is it the top three? I want to earn your support.
Top three.
That's what I like to hear. I want to earn your support because, look, I have a 17-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 12-year-old. Yeah, this election's about beating Donald Trump. But it's also about making sure what we hand off to that next generation is better than what we had. This is a tenuous time. This is a very tenuous time in this thing called representative democracy. We can do better. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks so much for being out. I'd be willing to answer almost any question. Thanks.
So you referenced preschool earlier. Since preschool is so important, what would you do to access to preschool and quality childcare?
So the question was, so you referenced preschool earlier, and preschool is so important. What would you do to actually ensure access to preschool?
Quality.
And quality preschool, not just preschool. Like, let's recognize, right? 90% of a child's brain is developed before they even enter kindergarten. If you're not kindergarten ready, half as likely to be at grade level by third grade. You're not at grade level by third grade, four times more likely to drop out of high school. Quality preschool program costs more than college tuition in most states right now. The fate of your future shouldn't be defined by the lottery of life of what family you're born into. When we talk about overall investing in education, I think the most important thing actually that we can do, look, our teachers don't get paid enough. You look at places like this that are actually cutting back investments into higher education, but making sure that quality preschool is universal for all. And that's where the federal government can actually step in. It's the smartest investment we can make, because for every $1 that we put in, it's about a $9 return. Thanks so much for fighting for it.
Yes, sir.
So, who is one of your favorite historical figures who's not a president?
My microphone just died. Check, check. What could go wrong here? The question was, what famous historical figure who is not a president, like, who's my favorite? Question was, what famous historical famous historical person that was not a president is my favorite? Can I say my great-great-grandfather who settled in Henry County? Because they had a store in Lowell through both World Wars. I mean, not a well-known political figure. I'll throw out a woman named Jeanette Rankin. So Jeanette Rankin was actually the first woman ever to get elected to Congress. And she came from the great state of Montana. And it was in the early 1900s. She's one that actually is one of my favorites. Another one that, you know, Montana, I talk about kicking dark money out of our elections. That really has been the fight of my career. one point, every single office was controlled by these wealthy copper barons. Called them copper kings. Mark Twain talked about it, and he said, in Montana, even by their example, corruption smells sweet in Montana. A newspaper in 1903 said, the greatest living issue confronting us today is whether the corporation shall control the people or the people shall control the corporations. Fast forward 100 years, and that's exactly what's happened. But the greatest living that never got names were regular folks that passed this thing called the Corrupt Practices Act of 1912 that said, you know what? We're all equal on one day, and that's election day. And our voice is stronger than any damn corporation. And they kicked the corporations out of our elections till Citizens United in Montana. We need to do it all across this country if we're ever going to get this democracy back. Yes, ma'am.
How would you address the shortage of mental health professionals and medical professionals in rural areas of Western states?
So the question was, how do you address the shortage of both mental health professionals and lack of mental health access, especially in our rural areas of our states? And it's something that you and I struggle with each and every day, something that I in Montana have struggled with as governor. Like, I knew when I actually got Medicaid expanded in a ruby red state at the time, 2015, the heart of the anti-Obamacare time, I knew that I'd not only save those rural hospitals, but provide opportunities for the 100,000 folks that get their health care, the vast majority of them who are working through Medicaid, 30,000 of them have gotten mental health treatment availability as well. We started, and this is in Montana, then we'll take it a little bit bigger. We started actually a program to address anybody that goes, usually folks see their primary care doctor. So we actually go through screenings from mental health perspective and seeing if there's suicidal ideations. Because at the end of the day, that's usually within 40 days of committing suicide. So algorithms, if things come up, they actually will be connected with licensed psychologists. We've done more of the telemedicine, and then we've also made it so that passed a law through that legislature that mental health parity and physical health parity in insurance has to be the same. And I think as a president, that you need to lead and you need to take both federal dollars and investing in the challenge, especially of rural areas. Because if we don't have quality access to mental health care, I mean, I as a Commander-in-Chief of the National Guard, I've lost 9 soldiers in 6 years, all to suicide. If we don't have access in our rural areas as well, you can't live in those communities. Sir.
I've heard Republicans always talk about the deficit when they're out of office, but recently Trump actually increased the deficit. What, and I've heard a lot of different Democrats talking about social programs that they want to add. What are you going to do once you're president to control the deficit or try and get it back under control?
Question was, Republicans always talk about the deficit till they actually get elected. Yeah. Then they do a $1.6 trillion, not tax cut, but tax loan, right? Because that next generation is going to pay for the Trump tax debts. Democrats talk about a lot of these social programs, but what are you going to do about that, right? And, you know, I think there is a different perspective coming from Washington, D.C. and from out of Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. has not passed a budget in 22 years on time. If I didn't do that once, I'd be kicked out of office. And I actually have to balance my budget each and every time. So when I look at what we can do and how we can invest and what we need to do to make sure that our kids and grandkids aren't actually saddled with all of the debt, I take a little bit different perspective. That's why I say when we talk about things like wish list economics, if I'm going to talk about a plan, I'm going to fund it. If I'm going to talk about one of the things, like I think my plan on healthcare is much better and it won't cost $30 trillion over the next decade. We have to be responsible stewards, and every time we talk about here's something new, we also have to talk about how we're going to fund it. I'll close because I have just like 47 seconds left. You know, when I got elected governor, my kids were 6, 8, and 10. It was the youngest in 40 years that had to live in the Montana governor's residence. And I'll never forget, we move in, my 6-year-old son kicks a soccer ball, bounces off this painting. Somebody says, you know, that painting is worth about $200,000. I'm like, then get rid of all the damn paintings, right? We have to live here. But we're in a deeply divided time, two-thirds Republican legislature at the time. And during my first day of the state, I started out by saying, my name's Steve, I work for the state. But I also said, the ages of kids, 6, 8, and 10, you're gonna be hearing different noises from the governor's house. And I think we as elected leaders need to learn that our kids learn from our words and our deeds, what we say and what we do, and our kids are watching today. We need to make sure we give something for them to aspire to and be inspired by. At some point, this president's gonna have to answer that. At some point, each and every one of us are gonna have to answer this. We can build that better union with actually bringing people together, not tearing this country apart. Thanks so much, thanks for having me. Go to stevebullock.com to sign up. Thanks for your Iowa nice. It'll take me from 35 to number 1 on your list.